to be with you today. This is the first Sunday I've been at church for 3 weeks. I wasn't at church last Sunday, when we went down to London. I was actually sick on that day, and then I wasn't at church Sunday before, and that's when we had to have Martin Fowler Yeltsin come to preach in my place at very short notice, and I heard he did a fantastic job. I'm really grateful to him for that. I'm thinking back, this is the first time in over a decade I've missed two Sunday services through illness in a row. First Sunday service. And I thought, that's a long time since that's happened. But fortunately, I'm feeling a lot better. Thank you. Many of you have been asking after my health and praying for me. I really appreciate that. A few weeks ago, I said I had a severe migraine, and first time I've ever experienced migraines, and then it's kind of ongoing. Over the last 4 weeks, I had about 500 migraines, and in between, lots of little headaches in between, just to keep you topped up, And I saw 3 different doctors over the last 4 weeks, and all of them asked the same question: are you going through any stress? Have you got any tension at work? And it's like, because you hate to think about that stress could cause you problems. And it's just, you hate to be thinking, for me personally, I don't like to consider myself to be a stressed person. I like to feel like I'm very relaxed, very easygoing. And so I think, when the first of all, and by the way, all this coincided around about the time when Julie started to become unstuck. And my wife, she's like, honey, it's me, I'm making you sick. I'm like, right, okay. But after the third doctor asked me the same question, I began to wonder. And it's funny because just having migraines, it's not something that's particularly visible. It's not like Mike's sick, he broke his leg, he's trying to rescue a pensioner, he's going to run over, and he's jumping to the Saver, and he's got hit by a car, but he's doing fine. It's not like that. Or it's not like Mike's sick, but he's suffering from dengue fever, and he's in the hospital, he's got a temperature of 137, it's not like that. And you kind of wish that it's something kind of visible. That, it's something that's obvious. And so going to the doctors and getting all this treatment, it's been actually quite discouraging. In fact, actually, seriously, after being dragging on again and again and again, and I was sharing this morning with someone that, in the last 4 weeks, I've only been out of the house 4 times. And each time I've gone out of the house, I've come back with severe headaches, and it's just been horrible. And so I've spent most of the last few weeks literally just in my bedroom, just lying down in a darkened room. But Hannah, I came out to go to the bathroom, and Hannah saw me in the morning and said, "Dad, how are you? I've not seen you in ages." But I've been in there, it's like I've been like a little hobbit in a hole, with the curtains drawn, the ears plugged in, just trying to keep the noise down, and it's just been horrible. And on a few people have ringing me up and asking how it's going, and on Tuesday, after this has gone on for a number of weeks, folks rang me up and said, "I missed you at church on Sunday, how are you doing?" And then I thought, geez, I said, "Oh, I'm fine, it's okay, it's not a problem, everything's okay, I've been sick, I'm getting better, that's been my stop." But I thought about how I'm really doing. And then I started to get all kind of emotional and choked up, and I'm really discouraged, folks. I said, it's been just so discouraging, just not being able to get up and get out and just do what I've normally been doing, I've been feeling really down. And then just as I was through this coach, then I got another call coming in at the same time, and this Wale ringing me up, and I got another call, I'll call you back. And Wale was on the phone, "Hey, Mike, can we help you? How are you doing?" And I said, "Oh, I was just getting told, I'm feeling really discouraged, and really down." And then I hung up, and then Julie came back, and she said, I just talked to Wale, and I was sharing about how I was feeling, and I began to get really emotional. And, I just couldn't see how getting better. It's just been going on and on for too long. My doctor referred me to go and see an acupuncturist and physiotherapist on Wednesday. And so this is day 4 I have these conversations. this stuff. And you know, to be honest, I've never had acupuncture before, but the idea of someone sticking needles in you doesn't fire me up. It's not like the program I'm about to really look forward to. And I didn't really put a lot of faith or hope in it anyway. I just thought, you know, it's one of those things when doctors don't know what the cause of the problem is, they say it's stress at work, that you had any changes, and lack of sleep, and all this kind of stuff, and okay, well, let's go refer you to an acupuncturist. It's like, and so you just get sent off to see someone, and I thought, well, I just put a lot of hope in it. And so the guy, you know, he treated me, started manipulating the back of my neck and spine, and you know, there's a lot of tension here, and I touch you as well. But he went on, and then he stuck some pins and around the back of my head and neck, and yeah, the neck doesn't really hurt very much at all. Apart from, you know, he's tapping these things into you, and I haven't had acupuncture, by the way. Wow, quite a number of you. I think of acupuncture, I think of this film back in the 80s called Hellraiser. But anyway, he's sticking these needles in you, and he's asking, is this hurt? No, that's okay. This hurt? Yeah, that hurts. Because sometimes it hits the nerve endings of my repositioning. But after a while, he finished up doing all that, I left, and it wasn't like there was any miraculous cure, so I had it. But the next day I woke up, actually, I started to feel for the first time less pain. And I don't know whether it was acupuncture, I don't know whether it was placebo effect, I don't know where it was, but I was just happy that the pain has gone down a lot. And actually then, over the next last couple of years, I felt a lot better, and today I woke up and I've seen the best I've felt in weeks. So I felt encouraged. But you know, today I was thinking, well, what am I going to share? What am I going to preach about today? And you know, on the announcement sheet, if you happen to have that, it says that Mike is going to preach today on the topic of feelings, can we trust them? Okay, so the short answer is no, we can't trust them. And anyway, I'm going to preach about feelings, I don't feel like doing that. So instead, we're going to look at the book of Ecclesiastes. And we don't have time to go through the whole book, so literally we're just going to have a very brief overview. But suffice to say, you know, Ecclesiastes is kind of in keeping with how I was feeling over the last few weeks, which is life is meaningless and unimpressed. And, you know, it's written by Solomon, or at least in Solomon's honour, and certainly about on his life. And let's pick up there in Ecclesiastes chapter 1. It says, the words of the teacher, son of David, king in Jerusalem. Meaningless, meaningless, says the teacher. Utter meaningless. Everything is meaningless. You get the idea that he's not kind of happy about life. He says, what does man gain from all his labour, which he toils under the sun? Generations come and generations go, but the earth remains forever. The sun rises and the sun sets and hurries back to where it rises. The wind blows to the south and turns to the north. Round and round it goes, ever returning on its course. All streams flow into the sea at the season of fools. The place the streams come from, there they return again. All things are wearisome, more than one can say. The eye never has enough of seeing, nor the ear is still of hearing. What has been will be again. What has been done will be done again. There is nothing new under the sun. Is there anything of which one can say, look, there is something new? It was here already, long ago. It was here before our time. There is no remembrance of men of old, and even those who are yet to come will not be remembered by those who follow. I, the teacher, was king over Israel and Jerusalem. I devoted myself to study and to explore by wisdom all that is done under heaven. What a heavy burden God has laid on men. I've seen all the things that are done under the sun, all of them are meaningless, the chasing after the wind. What is twisted cannot be straightened, what is lacking cannot be counted. I thought to myself, look, I've grown and increased in wisdom more than anyone who has ruled over a group before me. I've experienced much of wisdom and knowledge. Then I tried myself to understand the wisdom and also madness and folly, but I learned that this too is the chasing after the wind, for with much wisdom comes much sorrow. The more knowledge, the more grief. That's the end of the sermon. Where I'm going now. What a depressing thing, outlook. But yeah, you get a few clues here from what's going on in Solomon's life. scholars would assume that he's writing towards the end of his life. But as you read through the book, it pretty much continues in the same way it starts. That life is meaningless, everything is meaningless, there's nothing new under the sun. That term, under the sun, occurs frequently all throughout the book. And this whole idea is that life on earth, from a secular perspective, under the sun without God, it really is empty. It really is meaningless. So in the King James Version, vanity, vanity, all is vanity. There's just an emptiness there. And he goes on to look at his life and examine himself. He says, you know, I was wise, and why than all other guys, and I began to really take the opportunity to explore this. But he says, no, it's all just meaningless. And you know, the problem is, Solomon, he started off doing well. He started off remembering he had a dream, and God asked him in his dream, what would you have me do to you? And he said, just give me wisdom, so I can rule your people wisely. And God said, because you asked for wisdom, you didn't ask for power or money or anything else, I'll give you wisdom, I'll give you all these other things too. And he started off really well. But sadly, he began to stray. And he got bogged down with life, he got bogged down with sin. Look over in 1 Kings chapter 10. 1 Kings chapter 10. Now, it's interesting. This is an interesting book for us to be exploring right now, because you know, today it's been a fairly miserable day. It's raining and people are sick. You know, I'm actually feeling quite encouraged now. I'm as sick as I was. But you know, you come to church and Cecil Tanty's going to share the communion today, but he was sick, and you've got Paul Allen's going to be solemnly today, he's sick, and they're all ringing up Leslie. Leslie, you take care of this for us, but Leslie's sick. And it's just you know, everyone's sick, and it's that time of the year where it's you know, the clocks have gone back, and so now it's getting darker earlier. I'm driving back yesterday from Romford with my son, and it's at 5 o'clock in the afternoon, and it's dark outside. And my son goes, Dad, why is it so dark? And I have to explain that clock's going back, and he said, well, why? Why do you put the clocks back? And I talk about the farmers having to get up early in the morning while it's still dark, and trying to make it light for them. But at the end of the day, it's just gloomy. And you know, look at it, exactly, this is a gloomy kind of prospect. But you see, this is what happens when we drift from doing what we're supposed to be doing. And when we're, and without life, without God, actually really is gloomy. In 1 Kings, let's pick up in chapter 10. In fact, actually, let's pick up in verse 23. It says, King Solomon was greater in riches and wisdom than all the other kings of the earth. The whole world sought audience to Solomon to hear the wisdom God had put in his heart. Year after year, everyone who came brought a gift, offers of silver and gold, robes, weapons, spices, horses and mules. Solomon accumulated chariots and horses. He had 1,400 chariots and 12,000 horses. Can you imagine that? It's one thing when you look at girls and they think, "Gee, my dad can have a pony." To have 12,000 horses, we can keep them all. And who's going to look after them and feed them? And he says, 1,400 chariots, I mean, kids, what do you need all that for? But he says, he kept in the chariot cities, and also within Jerusalem, he had to have cities just to keep his chariots. So the king made silver as common in Jerusalem as stones, and cedar as plentiful as sycamore fig trees in the foothills. Solomon also imported from Egypt and from Kew, the royal merchants purchased them from Kew. They imported the chariot from Egypt for 600 shekels of silver, and the horse for 150. They also exported them to all the kings of the Hittites and of the Arameans. King Solomon, however, loved many foreign women besides Pharaoh's daughter. Moabites, Ammonites, Edomites, Sidonians, and Hittites, they were from nations about which the Lord had told the Israelites, you must not intermarry with them, because they will surely turn your heart after their gods. Nevertheless, Solomon held fast to them in love. He had 700 wives of royal birth, and 300 concubines, and wives led him astray. Now you think you've got married problems. 700 wives and 300 concubines. In verse 4, as Solomon grew old, his wives turned his heart after other gods. and his heart was not fully devoted to the Lord his God as the heart of David's father had been. He followed Ashtoreth, the goddess of the Sidonians, and Molech, the goddess, the temple god of the Ammonites. So Solomon did evil in the eyes of the Lord. He did not follow the Lord completely as David's fathers had done. On a hill east of Jerusalem, Solomon built a high place for Chemosh, the temple god of Moab, and of Molech, the temple god of the Ammonites. He did the same for his foreign wives, burned incense, and offered sacrifices to their gods. The Lord became angry with Solomon, because his heart had turned away from the Lord, the God of Israel, who had appeared to him twice. Although he had forbidden Solomon to follow God, Solomon did not keep the Lord's command. That's really sad. But here's a guy who is so wise, and yet at the same time so foolish, that God had given specific instructions, and he didn't follow them. And maybe he was politically motivated. You know, he married Pharaoh's daughter, which meant that he had a treaty with Egypt, and so then he was less likely to be attacked by them, and more likely to have open trade routes, and did the same for the other nations around, the Moabites, Ammonites, Edomites, Sidonians, Hittites. And so he married many of their women of royal birth, and so it forged political alliances. But what a mess! What a mess! His life ends up in, you know, look back in Deuteronomy chapter 17. But even back in the days before the Israelite nation had a king, God has given his law to Moses, and specifically, God has given instructions about the fact that one day in the future they would want to have a king. But here's the advice that God gave them, and he put it in the law. In Deuteronomy 17, verse 14, he says, "When you enter the land the Lord your God has given you and have taken possession of it and settled in it, and you say, 'Let us set a king over us by all the nations around us,' be sure to appoint over you the king the Lord your God chooses. He must be from among your own brothers. Do not set a foreigner over you, one who is not a brother is like. The king, moreover, must not acquire great numbers of horses." That's exactly what Solomon did. "He must not acquire great numbers of horses for himself or make the people return to Egypt," here Solomon, "and end up marrying an Egyptian woman, to get more of them. For the Lord has told you, you are not to go back that way. He must not take many wives." I think 700 is probably in violation of that command. "Or his heart will be led astray. He must not accumulate large amounts of silver and gold. He may still become so commonplace like stones," they said. In verse 18, "When he takes the throne of his kingdom, he shall write for himself on a scroll a copy of this law, taken from that of the priest or the Levite. It is to be with him, and he is to read it all the days of his life, so he may learn to revere the Lord his God and follow carefully all the words of this law and these decrees, not consider himself better than his brothers, and turn from the Lord to the right or to the left, that he and his descendants will reign a long time over his kingdom in Israel." Solomon didn't do that. And because of that, the kingdom was torn away. His son ended up losing 10 of the 12 tribes, and he could only reign in Jerusalem over the southern kingdom of Judah. But Solomon, he was meant to keep this law with him, and he was supposed to read it every day of his life. The king, the ruler of God's people, he was meant to make sure he took his Bible every day, so he wouldn't go astray. And that's good advice for all of us. You know, I've been reading this year, I've been going through a chronological Bible, a daily chronological Bible, so every day I've got a reading, as well as just doing my other Bible study. But I can tell, even over the last few weeks, that I was getting discouraged, because this whole year I've been consistently reading every single day from my chronological Bible, as well as other stuff. And now, because I've got the date, I can tell exactly how I'm doing. And now I'm like 3 or 4 days behind in my reading, just because I've been missing daily Bible study. And I can tell when I've just been getting down. When you lose track of God's commands, and when you drift away from God's word, that's when it's so easy to get into yourself and to lose your focus and to lose heart. Solomon, he clearly didn't keep this to the fore. He didn't maintain it on a daily basis. He drifted from this and ended up paying a heavy price. Go back quickly to Ecclesiastes. Ecclesiastes. You know, the one thing about being, positive thing about being sick is that, you know, people come and cook food for you. There's farmers, you know, walk around from chicken, rice and peas and planted. That cheered me up no end. But then, I think it was like the week before, Julie brought some food. She said, Jonah brought some food for you. Oh, that's really nice. And said, oh, but go to the cooking. She said, why are you sick? I'm just back with the food to my mouth. I'd be able to take this endless vacation around the world. I'll get to, you know, I could outrun winter. You know, when it gets cold over here, I'll fly to Florida. When the hurricane goes there, I'll fly off somewhere else. What? And if we had the finances, we've got all these great ideas and dreams of what we'd do. Some of them did all that. Been there, done that, bought a t-shirt, it's not worth it. He said, well, I have to say, everything that I've accomplished, everything I've done, it was a chasing after the wind, it was meaningless. And then oftentimes we make mistakes in life, and as long as we learn from our mistakes, that's okay. But isn't it better to learn from someone else's mistakes? And I think for us, we are blessed because we have this book right here. And Solomon did things that we will never be able to do. Solomon tried things that we will never be able to try. But he was a wise man. He wrote it down. He said, you know what? It's just not worth it. There's nothing in there. There's nothing to be gained. It's meaningless. And you know, in verse 17 of chapter 2, he says, so I hated life because the work of the government fund was grievous to me. All of it meaningless, chasing after the wind. And you know, we can go through the next 10 chapters, well, it's pretty much the same. You know, chapter 3 says, in the time for everything under the sun, and in verse 11 he says, God has made every beautiful time, he's all set eternity in the hearts of men. And you know, that we are, all of us, we have an eternal component that can only be satisfied by an eternal God. And when we believe in God or not, the fact is we're never going to be fulfilled unless we have that relationship with Him, our Creator. But you know, chapter 4, we read about, you know, two of the one that are often used in marriages. Chapter 5, we look there in verse 10, where he says, whoever loves money, never has money enough. Whoever loves wealth is never satisfied with income. And I think we can relate to that. Verse 11, the goods increase for those who consume them. And what benefit they to the owner except the feet of the idol. You know, this place, the reason I went to Rome was to buy a television set. Our TV this week died. And it was a gift from Julie's father-in-law. It was his old TV. He got a new TV. He gave his old TV. Which is fine by us, we're very happy to receive all these old things. And so you see, I don't know how old the TV was, it was pretty old, but it lasted us very well. But we just happened to be watching, I can't remember what it was we were looking at. Was that Question Time, or was that, it was either Question Time or Extraction. Not a choice in our house. And while we were watching it, the screen was suddenly, and died. I was like, what is that? I thought it was a fuse, but it wasn't a fuse because the little red light was still on. Press and broke control, and this and nothing. Dead. Plugged it out, plugged it in again, did that about 12 times. Nothing. Dead. And this coming week, we had Julie's father come to stay with us. He just recently had a hip replacement. And put on the bathroom, he's nearly 80 years old. So he's going to be coming to live with us for next few weeks. And so, June's like, since we had a TV that you can look at, we actually do have a small TV, like a 12-inch thing, that you can use a magnifying glass and see, okay. And we have that in our living room, and we've used that. We've had that like 16 years. My mum gave that to me many years ago. And so we've used that, but it's kind of a bit funny, because the TV is bigger than the PlayStation, which it sits on. It's smaller than the PlayStation. We've got a TV stand from the old TV, and it sits in the middle like a little ornament. And I'm quite happy to use that, but we're like, oh, come on, look at that. So we're not struggling to get on the TV. I took my son with me, and I was looking around for the smallest TV I could find. The smallest TV they did in the shop was 22 inches. It's like a computer monitor, but everything else was huge. 32 inch, 37 inch, 46 inch, 50. I just unbelievable. Taylor was me, and I said, I told the same one about this one, and Taylor was like, what about that one? What about that one? I said, no, this is fine. He said, oh, and all everyone else was in there, and you've got a TV. And it's doubled as a computer monitor as well, amazing. But you know, I brought it home, set it up, And just as I set it up, then our TV, the recorder that we use, that broke. And honestly, I thought, you know, it's more good, more problems. And the more you have, the more you have to get discouraged about. And that's just one thing. When he says, hey, you know, a good increase, so do those who consume. You know, the more you have, it doesn't fill that hole. It just creates problems of its own. Let's get down to chapter 11, because that's it, we've run out of time. Now, we'll just go to the end of the book. You say, well, that's a very depressing way to end. What was it all about? Well, you know, Solomon, he tried a lot of things in between, he tried to work, he tried everything else, and finally, he makes a choice. In chapter 11, verse 1, it's a proverb my mum used to quote, cast your bread upon the waters, for after many days you'll find it again. And I was like, what does that mean? I mean, you cast your bread upon the waters, and after many days you'll find it. What are you going to do with some soggy bread that's stained old? What's that all about? And my mum talked about how the more generous you are, the more you give, the more you receive, and everything else. But I thought, yeah, it's a better proverb to talk about. But anyway, the point is, skip down to verse 8. However many years man may live, let him enjoy them all, but let him remember the days of darkness, for they will be many. Everything to come is meaningless. Be happy, young man, while you're young, and let your heart be joined to those of you. Follow the ways of your heart, whatever you see, but know that for all these things, God will bring you to judgment. You know, today, at the end of the conclusion of all this, fine, when you're young, enjoy your life, but remember this, there's going to come a day of judgment. There is going to come a day of reckoning. And so no matter what we pursue, no matter what we path we choose to go after, we're going to have to stand before God one day. So live your life today the way you will wish you lived it when you're standing before God's throne on judgment day. Keep that in mind. And there's a very famous poem from chapter 12 on, where it talks about remember the days of your creation, remember your creation, the days of your youth. And it goes on, and told in this passage, we don't have time to go through it, it's all about this old age. As you get old, it talks about in verse 3 when he keeps in the house trembling. Probably thinking about that, the arms and hands, they begin to tremble. It talks about how to stop from in stoop, and you know, you begin to see your posture again get bowed. When the grinding ceases, that's when your teeth begin to fall out. Those of the windows grow dim, your eyes get have trouble seeing. And in verse 5, men are afraid of heights. You know, the fears of your youth begin to return. My son was asking, we're driving back from London. He said, Dad, what are you afraid of? And I said, interestingly enough, I think I'm getting a bit afraid of heights. Really? I think, remember when we were in Singapore, went to chairlift, and we had to just, our legs were just hanging, I was a bit scared. He said, I'm not scared. I said, when I was young, I didn't be scared either. But as you get older, it's amazing how things can come back. But he said in verse 6, remember him before the silver cord is severed, or the golden bowl is broken. Before the pitcher is shattered at the spring, the wheel broken the well, and the dust returns to the ground that it came from, and the spirit returns to the God who gave it. As you get older, you start to realize, you know, at funerals when they say, ashes to ashes and dust to dust. The older you get, the more you realize, one day that's going to be me that they're talking about. That the dust to dust is going to be me. And if we understand that death is coming to us all, and the judgment awaits. Then, he says in verse 13, now all that's been heard, here is the conclusion of the matter. Fear God, and keep his commandments, for this is the whole duty of man. For God will bring every judgment, every deed into judgment, including every hidden thing, whether it's good or evil. You know, God is going to bring every deed into judgment. And so the important thing is, we've got to be ready. We've got to keep that in our hearts, our minds, and we've got to live life accordingly. Now this last week, Anna was sharing with me, she said that on Sarah's Facebook page, she'd written a note saying, Dad made me cry this week. And she sent me a card. And so I read that, and so I called Sarah. I said, I'm in crying. Oh, yeah, that card you sent to me, thank you so much. And I said, well, remind me, what's that writing the card again? No, shit. But I just written this card to her quickly, because she sent it to me. And what I wrote was simply this. I said, hi, honey, here's a check for from your close Halifax account, and you can post it on your current account. I thought we had a cry, I wrote, we miss you loads and pray for you daily. Thanks for keeping in touch, not only with us, but also with Hannah and Kate. It means a great deal to all of us. We love you with all our hearts, and what we can never forget, that you are never out of mind or far from our thoughts, regardless of where you may be physically. We have you in our hearts now and always. We are so proud of the beautiful, spiritual, godly woman you've become. You make us very happy. Love, Mum and Dad. You know, the conclusion the song came to was we need to keep God's commands in our hearts. And if we can just do that and live accordingly, then life will not be so meaningful.